Chapter 12. The sickle moon broke the veil a long way out from Aurelian, driven off course by a brutal warp squall just before making for the planned exit vector. Yashugai had felt every beat and hammer of the ether storm during the passage. The surges had pushed against the fragile outer shell of the vessel, swamping it, pressing down on it like piled earth against a rotten wall. He had flown through worse, but the endless torment of the heavens took its toll. The ship was in little better shape now than when it had rejoined service immediately after Prospero, and then it had been barely voidworthy. Everywhere he looked, there were signs of stress, bulwarks cracked down to the decking, the taste of leaked promethium, the continual flicker of lumens. Locked away in his personal chambers, he recited the mantras of homecoming, shutting out the turmoil for just a few moments. He stood, eyes closed, before an altar over which hung the calligraphic Tiang. Whispers of sandalwood smoke curled upwards from golden bowls, glistening from the light of three drifting suspensor lumens. He felt fatigue lying heavy on his limbs and went through the long-established muscle relaxant exercises. Those disciplines predated his ascension to the Legion and were designed to work with mortal limbs, but he had never got out of the habit of using them. If they had little effect on his enhanced physiology, the repetition of old rites soothed the disquiet in his mind. The warp made it worse. To one with his gifts, piercing the centre of the storm was a mental challenge. On some nights, he could not escape the visions, the stretched faces clustered against the hull, the fingers scraping down the adamantium, the deep, thundering howl of infinite voices circling over the abyss. On the altar top rested the tarot pack he had been given by Arvida. The deck of Esoterica had once belonged to Ahriman, lost equerry to the Crimson King, and had been retrieved from Tisca by its last living son. Arvida had passed it on to Yashugai a long time ago, having rejected the chance to formally join the Fifth Legion, and since then it had sat, barely touched, in the Storm Seer's chambers. Only in recent months, as the stormways had closed about them, had he reached for the symbols. Even with his eyes closed, he could see the pictograms last turned over. The swordsman, the one-eyed king, the fiery angel. The signs remained opaque. Perhaps the tarot only answered to its old master. Or perhaps Yashugai was just failing to see something, letting his fatigue get the better of him. In any case, scrying the future had never been his talent. His was an elemental gift, power over the ways of matter, the stuff of the physical. Prophecies and soul delving, that had been the preserve of the others, the ones who had dug too deep. But still he turned the cards one by one. From time to time he felt he was on the edge of something, just on the cusp of seeing a pattern, and those moments would spur him to research further. Then he smiled to himself. Even he was capable of weakness, of the human vice of just a little further. That was the root of it all this damnation, the satiation of curiosity, the pushing into the darkness. There was no unlearning it. It was written into the genetics of every one of them, the seeds of species destruction, as permanent and furtive as a virus. He opened his eyes. The suspensors glowed to full power, flooding the chamber with daylight-equivalent illumination. He moved over to the altar and took one final card from the deck, turning it face up. The Hierophant. Yashugai placed the card on the stone. The card still showed its old artwork, a delicate ink and wash over thick, gold-edged material. The depicted prelate held his hand up, two fingers angled towards the heavens, two curled into the palm, extending earthwards. Yashugai's smile died. The deck was mocking him, and he was not in the mood to indulge it. He turned and left the chamber, the suspensors following him like trained dogs. Doors hissed open and closed three times, tracing a route deeper inside his private rooms. Every surface was thick with glyphs, all drawn by his own hand. Some were wards against Yaksha, others magnifiers for weather magic. The final set slid apart to reveal Ilya's guest, now restored to something like health, clad in clean white robes and sitting at his ease, alone, in a hull-facing cell. The warp shutters on the porthole had withdrawn, giving him a view of the approach to Aurelian through the real viewers. He didn't turn to greet the Stormseer. Alongside everything else, he seemed to have recovered his nobilité hauteur.
"So, the woman has discovered all she can," the man, Vale, said, dryly. "And now they send for the soldier."
Yashugai joined him at the viewport. At that stage, the destination was just a larger star amid a whole swathe of lesser stars. They would encounter Fifth Legion Outriders long before the planet asserted itself as more than just another pinpoint of cold light.
"No, I am not soldier," said Yashugai. "You are a legionary. You may dress it up in as many totems as you like, but you still kill for the Imperium."
"Many who kill are not soldier. You have killed, I think, in your own way."
Vale turned to face him. Yashugai saw a creased, pale face. The man's cheeks were still hollow, his eye sockets ringed with black.
"I cannot tell you what you wish to know," Vale said. "She asked me many times."
"Then tell me of your work."
Vale shuffled away from the viewport.
"What do you wish to know?" "Everything."
Vale laughed.
"That would take a long time. Longer, I think, than you have to spare." "They are hunting you, she tells me."
Yashugai felt a small but significant sense of disappointment. The man's voice was arch, the kind of cultivated Terran accent that spoke of entitlement and boredom. It was hard to square with the terrified, famished soul they had rescued from Herivale.
"All wars can be won," Yashugai said. "This no different."
"No, I think this one is very different."
Vale shot him a cold smile.
"The woman, her name is General Ravalion, told me of your predicament. You are a Legion librarian, not a fool, so I do not need to pretend with you. The warp is home to more than storms. If they can speak to those things, then they can hem you in. You will not be going home."
"The Kargan has ordered it. It will be done."
Vale looked incredulous.
"You truly think that?"
He turned on the Stormseer, jabbing his bony finger for emphasis.
"He may be a Primarch, but he does not command the tides. This is how they work. They are movements of souls, of minds, caught in patterns set by the living while they still draw breath. You cannot force a path. If you try, the ether responds. The great conduits will thicken, the lesser ways will wither. Your enemies will slide through the dark as if through water, while you wade through pools of the dragging mire."
"I do not know the warp as you do," said Yashugai, "but I know is not that simple. Otherwise, no movement is possible at all."
"There are layers," said Vale impatiently. "Yes, there is stratum etheris, the shallow ways. There is stratum profundis, the greater arteries plunging deeper. There is stratum obscurus, the root of the terror. How does this help you? No living man can navigate the deep ways. Even he could not."
"But you try to map it."
"It could not be done."
Vale shook his head with frustration.
"He was wrong about that, at least. It is not a mirror. It moves like a living thing. It is a living thing. Touch it and it trembles."
He briefly lost his certainty.
"I do not have the eye, but still I have seen things. I have studied what they study. The complexity is immortal."
"Try to explain,"
Yashugai spoke softly.
"I am fast learner."
Vale exhaled, his eyes widening. "The seas is an ocean. All know this. It has currents. It has depths. It has storms. Near the surface, you can see the cartomancer's light. You can follow it. You can use your Geller Aegis, and you are kept barred from the intelligences. But even then, you are just below the upper limits. Go deeper, and the Aegis shatters. The lights go out. The eye is blinded. When men say that they traverse the warp, they boast, for no mortal does more than skim across eternity's face, like stones thrown by a child. We do not belong there. It is poison for us. And the deeper in, the worse the poison.
Chelieu, try to go deeper?
Who knows? Maybe. He did not succeed. Do you know why not?
Because it is impossible. It takes the power of a tormented sun just to puncture the shallowest shoals. No energy in our arsenal could possibly pierce further. String the reactors of a dozen battleships together, double their potential, and still it would not be enough. So no, he did not succeed.
General Ravalion had trust in him.
She should not. Vale looked disgusted. Believe me, she should not. They are all the same, the oculi. They spend too long gazing into it. You know what they say about the abyss? Yashugai did not reply at once. He studied Vale carefully, noting every tick, every mannerism. The man was not being deceptive. Ilya was right about that. Still, there was something. He had spent a long time inside the Nobilites' councils, and that left a mark. He might not even be aware of it himself. Every moment with them had left a trace, perhaps even one that could be detected.
I do not doubt you, Vale of House Chelieu,
Yashugai said at last.
We do not belong there. I often consider, in the night, wisdom of building empire on such foundation. But there was no other way, no?
Vale shrugged again. Not one that worked, he mumbled. Yashugai held his gaze for a few moments longer, then released him.
You educate me, so I do not despair yet. Ilya was right to chase down this man.
You still think you can find him, Vale said, irritated. How many times must I tell you? I do not know where he is. Break me if you choose. It will not help you.
I would not break you. That is not our way. But there may be another.
Yashugai looked back up to the real viewer. Far ahead, 6 points of light were moving across the starfield, escorts racing to engage them and take them into the heart of the fleet.
I have not skilled to seek traces you have forgotten. This is mind work. But I have a friend. He has these things. When we arrive, I shall introduce you.
Yashugai caught Vale's wary expression and laughed.
Fear not, he said. He is last survivor of a world too. I think you and he will find much to talk about.
By the time the Kaljian reached the outer edge of the muster system, the bulk of the fleet was already in position. The great white warships prowled high across Aurelian III's stormy troposphere, circled by packs of their hunter-killers and formation-breakers. Shibben had planned to take his ship into tight alignment with the Swordstorm, in the expectation that he would be summoned to the flagship within a few hours of arrival. Instead, his path was blocked by an interfleet shuttle. Once it became clear that the interloper had no intention of standing down from the Kaljian's incoming vector, hails were issued and met by a standard army protocol burst. Once he had heard that, Shibben gave the order for full stop.
Bring it in, he told the ship's master. I will meet her in the forward tower.
Then he waited, alone, up above the great command bridge facade. Narrow real viewers gave a glimpse of the foredecks, long and rangy, like all ships of the class, ridged and rigged for gunnery. He paced across floors of stone, overlooked by walls marked with Chogorian runes. A long crack ran up one side, evidence of the structural stress caused by the flight from the Emperor's children. That might get repaired before the fleet was deployed again, though most likely it would remain a mark of battle to add to the hundreds of others. He was not waiting long. As ever, she made her way efficiently from the hangars, escorted by an honor guard from the Brotherhood. They left her at the door, bowing before sealing the two of them in together. She looked painfully thin. Her frame, always spare, now barely filled out her uniform. Her grey hair had whitened, and the lines around her tight mouth had deepened into dark cracks. Shibben bowed low.
"Zu Elia," he said.
She made the Aquila in return.
"Taxir."
Then she looked his armor up and down, like a mother appraising a wayward son.
"I always wondered, could they not have painted it white?"
"I asked them not to," said Shibben. "It is not battle plate. It is a machine."
Ilya smiled.
"You people and machines. You use servitors. You fly starships."
Shibben tapped his gauntlet against his chest.
"Not in here. That is the difference."
"Then wear Legion colors."
"I will, when I can wear power armor again."
Ilya said nothing.
"So then, why are you here, General?"
Shibben kept his voice amiable.
"Do you not have 1,000 tasks? We are still a rabble of disorganization, are we not? There must be matters to set straight."
"I arrived here just before you did," said Ilya. "I have my work before me, to put the muster in its order."
She looked around her, at the scars of battle on the chamber walls.
"By the looks of things, it will be needed."
Shibben laughed lightly.
"Just what did we do before you came among us, Zu?"
"Just what you are doing now."
Her voice was harder than it had once been.
"Killing yourself for no reason, wasting potential that could be used where it is most needed."
Shibben lost his smile.
"I think I do not understand you."
"You understand perfectly.
I lost brothers in the last action. I would not have ordered them to fight if it were not worthy."
"Once, perhaps."
She looked at him straight on, her tired eyes never wavering.
"Now you would fight at every turn. You would fight while the stars went out, brawling over a universe empty of joy. If the orders did not come, you would find some way to seek them out and hunt them down."
"You describe a warrior,"
Shibben said softly.
"You were once more than that."
"Since you have known me,"
he said, gesturing to his exoskeleton again,
"this has been everything."
"You had a life before, so they tell me."
"Zu, with respect, I asked you why you were here."
Ilya's glare never wavered. Her body might have weakened, but her spirit clearly had not.
"You know he will call the Khans together for Kurultai. You will speak just as the others will. I come here to ask you to change the counsel you give him."
Shibben turned away and walked over to the real viewers. As he did so, the pistons in his right leg clicked. They would need to be realigned.
"If you think I have the power to sway his judgment, you are mistaken. He will always know what he wishes to do."
Ilya followed, hovering at his side, coming up to little more than chest height against his post-human bulk.
"Taxia, I do not speak to you with disrespect, so do me the same courtesy. You command factions all across the Ordu. 20 brotherhoods would follow you to war against their own Noyan Khans. Yet more heed what you say and weigh the words."
Shibben listened. He had once found her voice, mortal, breathy from age, almost endearing. Now it sounded merely shrill.
"We have been making these arguments for more than a year," she went on, "to maintain the resistance or find a way back. You have kept up the campaign to fight on, pushing him harder, pushing your brothers. They remember what you did at Prospero, and they listen. But it cannot go further. Not now."
Shibben smiled, though with little warmth.
"Then you have an alternative," he said. "If you do, speak now. If you do not, what else remains?"
He drew closer to her, looking down at her tight-drawn hair, noting how her hands shook when they moved.
"You know us by now, surely. We made oaths. We swore over the blood of our slain brothers."
He felt the beginnings of the rage stir again so quickly now.
"That is why we were created, Zu. I believe this now. We are the judgment of the free on the corrupt. We are the vengeance of heaven. While one of us lives to wield a blade, they will not know peace. And that is enough, for it is all that remains.
No! She remained defiant, fragile and stubborn. There is the throne. There is the promise your Primarch made himself, the one that will bring us back to it.
Ha! You think he cares a damn for the throne?
He is of Terra. Why do you always forget this?
And we are of Chogoris.
Shibun found he had involuntarily curled his metal fingers together and forced his hand to relax.
If we could not defend our own world, the world we were forged on, what matter the world of emperors? We have lost our home. It lies beyond the fleets of the traitor, and no one is saying let us break all vows of honor and return to our own lands and drive the enemy from our towers and purge his filth from skies that were once the purest of all skies claimed by humanity.
Ilya waited for the words to stop spilling out. When he had finished, she looked up again wearily.
If I could bring your home world back, I would. If the Kargan gave me the order, I would break open heaven and hell to bring the fleet there. But your lord is not a fool. He knows that it cannot be done, and if he sent his sons into that furnace, then none would return. I have seen him plan for your survival, Taxir. I have seen him garner every last scrap of strength he possesses to keep the Legion alive while the greatest war host ever assembled hunts it down.
Shibun shook his head.
Alive is nothing. We were not made to grow old. We were made to ride, to chase our enemies to exhaustion and burn their high places.
Yeshugai told me the same thing.
Then you should have listened.
He also told me, a long time ago, that you did not have a center. That wherever he was, that was the center.
That was indeed just the kind of thing Yeshugai would have said. For a moment, Shibun was back at the walls of Kum Kata, long ago, with the hot wind of the summer on their faces, he and the Zadyin Aga. They had spoken there before the great change, when Shibun's body was a half-formed bridge between man and Superman.
I can only imagine, Terra, Shibun had said. You may yet witness it,
Yeshugai had told him. Then, they had felt like empty words, the kind of thing said all across the galactic empire of humanity that would never come true. Then the grassland had rustled in a shimmer pattern of blue and green, the wind making the pennants snap, the sun baking the mud bricks of the monastery walls into cracked shells. Then his limbs had been clean, smooth, tanned. Then he had laughed easily.
I will go to Kurultai to listen, Shibun said. If he asks me, I will speak. That is how it works.
We are striving to find a way out, said Ilya, insistent now. The chance is faint, but we only need time. Yeshugai believes in it.
Shibun locked his gauntlets together.
It is in his nature to believe. We cannot all be like him.
More's the pity, muttered Ilya.
Shibun smiled at her.
Do your work. Make your case. If you sway his will, then I will fight for you, just as I fight for any cause I am ordered to.
Ilya finally let her eyes drop from his, shaking her head.
You do not see how this has changed you. You used to preach this virtue, Orak, Odsak. Withdraw, but then return. I never hear that said anymore.
Shibun recognized the Korchin, spoken strangely by a Terran. It had been a long time since he'd mouthed them himself.
Those were words for another age.
So you keep telling me, but I no longer believe you. You relish this. You see the war shattering everything you have built, and part of you longs for it. I can see it when you go into battle. It is the easier path, Shibun Khan. I have seen mortal men succumb to it, but the harm you can do is greater. She reached out to him, placing her frail hand on his forearm. Remember yourselves. It is not yet all ruined. If Terra is saved, the Imperium can be remade. The storms can be compassed, the way made straight. We have to be there.
She really believed that. Seeing that, Shiban hardly knew what to say to her. He might have told her what had been apparent to him for a long time, that it was all gone, that a noble dream dreamt by other minds had been ripped open to reveal the nightmare beneath, and moreover, it was a dream that they had no part in, which had barely included them from its inception. He took her hand in his and gently removed it from his arm.
I will do what he orders, he said.
But what will you counsel? Has anything I said made any difference? It was too late for that now, and she ought to have seen it, but he had no wish to hurt her further than the truth already had.
I make no promises, Zhu, Shiban said, turning away.
Von Calder listened to the hum of the Proudheart's engines. He pressed his fingers to the slab before him and felt the vibrations radiate through his arm.
Do you hear it? He whispered, lowering his head towards the mass of flesh and sinew below. Do you hear that sound?
It was unlikely. The subject strapped to the Medicaid bench no longer had ears, nor eyes, nor lips. Its face, which had once been mortal, was a mass of bloody wire, punctuated with red-rimmed holes ready for the insertion of sense units. Von Calder stroked iron-tipped fingers along a trembling ribcage.
We are back in the warp. That is what it tells me. The Lord Commander has his quarry.
He reached for a scalpel. All around the operating table, menials worked in perfect silence. Their faces were a study in variety, hairless, grill-mouthed, masks of iron with glittering compound eye bulges, grafted with the mouths of beasts, or as smooth and featureless as eggshells. Von Calder lowered the implant towards its receptacle, and feeder wires splayed like spiders' legs towards the fixing nodes. Just as the needles lined up for slipping under skin, he heard the low thud of power-armored boots. He looked up. Konanos had entered the apothecarian.
Something I can do for you, brother?
Asked Von Calder, holding the implant steady.
When you are done, do not trouble yourself.
Von Calder drew in an irritated breath. He had hours of work ahead. Captured Fifth Legion mortals were hard to subvert, and their blood chemistry differed subtly from Chemosians. Many had died before being improved, so there remained much to learn in order to give Eidolon the extra crew cohorts he wished for. The implant slipped into the empty eye socket, clamping tight to the bone. The subject pushed against its bonds, no doubt in excruciation, but no longer with vocal cords to scream. Von Calder finished the insertion, wiping blood from the neat cut. The micro-sutures went in, dotting neatly across the join. Then Von Calder stood up again, returning the instruments to the salver next to him.
Monitor vital signs, he said to the nearest menial. Do not let this one die.
Then he looked over to Konanos, who had started to wander down into the chambers beyond.
A moment, brother. Be careful, if you please.
The apothecarian was crowded with gurneys, Medicaid slabs and claw-shaped operation cradles. The gleaming surfaces were thick with steel instruments, vials of gurgling nutrients, coils of translucent tubing. In the midst of that, Konanos was like a giant let loose in a treasure cave, blundering past fragile tools with his every movement.
This is impressive, Konanos said, appreciatively. You learned all this from Fabius?
Von Calder caught up with him as he passed down a winding stair of white-veined stone. Gurgled grunts of pain echoed up from deep spaces below, filtered through shafts that led down to the pits of the apothecarian.
Some of it, he said, defensively. He is not the only flesh-weaver in the Legion.
Konanos flashed him a rictus-like grin. Free of his helm, the orchestrator's throat and face were a great tumescent mass of sound chambers and emitters. His eyes gleamed, as pink as a rat's, out from the cranial folds of glistening skin.
No, he is not, but you have been busy since we last spoke.
They descended slowly, stepping around the blood cyclers and organ columns. The war had placed many demands on the fleet's apothecarians, and every space, every surface was cluttered with the debris of body augmentation.
It is good, truly, to see you here, brother, said Von Calder, brushing past a line of glass tubes, each the size of a man.
Some were empty, others were occupied by dark shapes, thrashing against the edges like fish on a line.
Yet you know, of course, that we are busy.
Konolos continued to look about him with a kind of enthusiast's wonder. Glossy things hung from the roof on chains, twisting and buffeting under the glare of medical lumens.
And you know that our commander has the course bearing he needs.
Von Calder nodded.
He sent me word. And every ship he could signal is in the warp, a third of the Legion. Imagine that.
And the Palatine Blade?
Konolos shot Von Calder a weary look.
Eidolon remains taken with him.
They entered a long, low room. Its walls were ellipses of iron, ribbed and studded with inward-facing spikes. The air became hotter, throbbing out from dull red mesh panels.
The commander is always taken with novelty. It will wear off.
Curls of steam rose up from filters in the floor, twisting like entrails. Strange noises echoed from up ahead, no longer the agony echoes from human torment, but more like barks or bestial rasps.
You know him best, said Von Calder, but it might be wise not to assume too much. Things are not what they were when the Primarch was in command.
Konolos headed towards a circular door at the far wall, ringed with iron and inscribed with old variants of Chemosian runes. Just as he neared the release mechanism, Von Calder reached out to pull him back.
Be wary, brother.
Konolos's eyes never left the portal.
Why? What lies beyond?
Von Calder moved towards the outer seal.
My realm, he said flatly.
Konolos looked up, then back, taking in the arcane architecture.
There is a direction of travel, he said musingly. A decision made. We will better ourselves. We will experience all there is to experience. We suffered for that decision, and others will suffer for it.
Von Calder said nothing, but the foretaste of violence suddenly sparked in the narrow chamber like fear musk. His fingers moved a fraction closer to his holstered bolt pistol. Konolos moved back towards the door.
I would have that direction of travel reinforced. I would not have any regrets when the time comes for reckoning. You do not only twist flesh, my brother, you twist worlds. You tear the veil.
Von Calder tensed, judging how quickly he could move.
I do nothing without...
Hush! Konolos turned back, placed his finger against Von Calder's lips.
You and I are of the same mind, truly. Show me what you have done.
Von Calder hesitated. Even now, even after all the Primarch had done to settle the issue, there were still risks, for ancient prescriptions died hard, and a legion that had learned treachery could birth it within its own ranks easily enough. Then he moved his hand away from the pistol and reached for the seal.
Tread carefully, he said.
Watch where you look.
He entered the pass sequence, and steel bolts shot back. With a hiss of escaping air, the portal swung open. Beyond was a thick haze of lilac, heavy with complex scents. The muffled barking faded away, replaced by a low, lisping hiss. Von Calder and Konolos went inside, and for a moment the gloom across the threshold baffled even their enhanced eyesight. When the haze cleared, it revealed a circular space marked by runes painted in red-brown all across the walls. A bronze-lined pit opened up before them, barred by thick armor glass, just like the body tubes up in the apothecarium. The base of the pit was full of corpses, piled a meter high, a heap of cracked bones protruding from hunks of raw meat. Above the corpse pile squatted something that was almost impossible to see properly. A false reflection, a shaft of misdirected moonlight. Only when it moved did broken aspects flit across the visual field. A crown of thorns, whiteless eyes, a full-lipped mouth with a lashing tongue the length of a man's arm. At times, its flesh resembled that of a human woman, at others a man. As the two legionaries approached the glass, something lashed across the barrier at them, blurred with speed.
Ah, beautiful, said Konanos, nodding appreciatively. Where did you get it?
Von Calder hung back. There were still times when he doubted the wisdom of this work.
It is not ready. None of them are.
Konanos gave him a sly smile.
There are those, they tell me, who are not yet committed to enlightenment. They cling to older disciplines. They do not see the benefit of improvement.
He edged closer to the protective glass, and something like a crab's claw snickered click-clack in the shadows.
Yet this is our future. These are our allies. That is why you did it, yes?
Von Calder felt nauseous. He always did when in the presence of the things he had summoned into captivity, their ephemeral presence kept anchored by the continual sacrifice of the living.
Kario's favor is high.
Konanos swept around towards Von Calder, catching his face between his gauntlets. He drew closer, and Von Calder smelt the sweetness of his breath.
And in that, you have your answer. The Palatine Blade is as damned as we. He hears the whispers just as we do. This thing may even hasten them, and I would enjoy that.
He looked back at the writhing shadows, and his pink eyes shone.
Forget making more menials. This is your task now.
The thing behind the glass thrashed at him, whipping strands of something nearly physical in a vicious downstroke. Something. Either the thick armor glass or the mystic signs daubed across the dark metal held it back.
This order is from the Soul Severed?
You did not wait for that before.
Konanos licked his cracked lips.
He will tire of his swordsmen in time, but time is not something we have in infinite supply. So make these answer your call, and when we next take the ships into war, I want them with us.
He released Von Calder and moved back towards the armored glass. The creature within responded, and a pair of violet eyes, greater than a human's, almond-shaped and cruel, flickered into life amid the shadows. Konanos watched it move, mesmerized.
They are contagious, he breathed. It is time that we hastened the pace of infection.